That is all of it in a nutshell. We can like laugh a little bit because the guy who does that's kind of funny. But bottom line is that is a true story.
Oh yeah,
for a whole bunch of people.
So we were talking about
we have to say who she is though. It's Jo McGuire. She's the executive director of the National Drug and Alcohol Screening Association.
Yeah.
And there's just so much to discuss. But we were into the workplace testing.
Right.
Bill was drilling workplace testing. Go back, Bill.
Well, I'm just, I don't know. I guess I've never really been comfortable being the administrator of the drug test. I'm not a medical professional, and my training consists of reading a flyer that came on my email on how to do a drug test. And I don't know. I just never felt qualified, I guess. I mean, I know how to do it. I can read directions and swab somebody and stick in an envelope and send it off. But, you know, when you talk about how drugs don't affect other people, it affected me because I'm not comfortable doing that. I have a job to do, and I just don't feel that I should be put in a position to test somebody's drug result. I mean, they used to go down to a clinic.
What happened to that?
They don't do it anymore. Now it's all done locally. You get a little drug kit, you test them, and you send it off, and they send you back the results. But
is that normal, Joe?
I've got you.
Doing that?
I got some updated news for you on that. When I went to work over at Costco, they just give you something to chew on for about a minute and a half, and they know right then and there what the results are.
Really?
Really?
Wow.
I guess.
Is that real?
That's interesting.
I've never heard of that.
I mean, you probably ordered that off of Amazon or something. I don't know, but.
Costco reality, has secret gum from Amazon.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. But the reality, there's always new emerging technology. So someone somewhere sold them on that and said this is an awesome thing to do. I don't know. They didn't call me, but that's okay. Ultimately, it used to be that you went to some type of a clinic or a collection site. A lot of those have been driven out of business because economically so many people have just dropped the drug test from their workplace policy because of this type of political pressure. It's hard to find those anymore. So a lot of companies, have said, hey, Bob, you get this job, which sucks because You aren't. You're not a trained professional collector, which we like to see and encourage people to use. We have training that we provide and, to help people kind of understand the efficacy and what they're participating in and whatnot. But I don't love those choices, but I do know that they happen and they've happened all over the country. A lot of employers, I mean, we're seeing year over year employers just continue to drop the drug test and it'll happen even more with Schedule 3. But ultimately, the whole thing, because I was thinking on the break, I want to take a step back and make sure that we acknowledge there are a lot of people and even extremely conservative people who do not like the concept of drug testing because they do feel like it is a violation of personal rights. And this is a strongly libertarian view that drug testing is, within personal rights. And so I've said to my friends who come at me with that point of view, I've got a lot of friends and family members who want to, challenge me and tell me I'm wrong because of, that particular thing. And I always say, look, there's a responsibility here to public safety for all of us. And do we believe in speed limits? Do we believe that we should have stop signs? Do we believe that there should be 20 miles per hour at the school? zone, right? To a degree, we wish we didn't need helmet laws. We wish we didn't need all that stuff. But people in, you know, the great experiment that is our culture, they don't always take that personal responsibility seriously, so we have to have laws.
Mm-hmm.
So in this regard, we've had to put some boundaries and boxes around this issue because people, as the song just declared, coming into this conversation, they don't behave responsibly. And so what is at stake is for the American business, the American business owner, the entrepreneur, particularly the small business owner who our whole entire economy is built on the back of the small business owner, which we love and we celebrate. That person can be completely run out of business by drug problems of employees who have no boundaries.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, this is an avenue and an opportunity for them to have some policies that say, if you're going to help me make my widgets, I'm going to expect you to do that safely. And I'll tell you, we have a lot of data out there that shows that there are entire industries that test very little compared to others, and one of them being hospitality. And I, you know, you guys mentioned early on, like, fast food, I think one of you said, or Walmart or whatever. I pulled up several months ago to a favorite donut shop, and I tried to place an order at the speaker, and the young person on the other end of that speaker just couldn't make heads or tails of what I was saying. So I pulled up to the window. I said, I'm coming to the window. So I pulled up, and this kid could not string two sentences together.
Wow.
And I said, can you get your manager for me? And when the manager came up, who was probably about the same age, they were really young, the waft of marijuana smoke just came right out the window. And I said, okay, I was going to make a complaint to you, but what I'm going to say is y'all need to stop smoking pot in the back room, and I'm going to be on my way. And they just started giggling and laughing and having a great time. Okay, those kids are running fryers in
yeah,
the back.
Right. I was going to say there's a lot of dangerous equipment in there.
Right, yeah. And there's food safety, and there's all, you know, they're handling cash. And so it doesn't only have to be the pilots and the over-the-road haulers
sure.
That need to be concerned about safety. And the hospitality industry specifically tends to kind of turn a blind eye. But that's why you can't keep people on jobs. That's why prices go well, it's not the only reason, but it's contributing to rising costs, to shrinkage and shortages and employee theft and product theft. I mean, I could go on and on because I've seen it for years, but we, at some point in time, there's got to be some boundaries for safety. We know this works. We know it's effective. We're very proud of that, but we are constantly under attack, and we recognize that as well.
Yeah, I've just recently elected to hire a person who's going to start in a couple of weeks. They said they can pass a drug test, which is always a question I ask. And there are, you know, we have everything from over-the-road truck drivers, equipment delivery people, right down to the person that stocks the shelves. You know, all of those positions have a safety element to them. And if you are messed up, you could hurt somebody, you could hurt yourself, which goes right to a comp claim, which goes right to the bottom line of your business. So I understand the importance of doing a drug test, but I'm just not clear on the legality of, you know, okay, it's a company policy, so you have to take the drug test. Well, that's great, but company policy I don't think trumps state law. Like state law doesn't trump federal law.
But that works when it's a, when you're in a state where they've legalized it for recreational use.
Well, like your class two.
Back to the handbook.
Well, if right. you're a truck driver, yeah. you fall under federal and state laws.
Right, but if you don't.
But if you don't, if you're the guy in the back that's stocking the shelves, It's a lot of people think, well, who cares if he gets high? What's going to happen there? Well, a lot can happen.
So it's a little bit more nuanced than that, and I'm really glad you're bringing this up because it is every company's responsibility to make sure that their policy is compliant with the state laws. But so far, there is not a single state in the United States that has not allowed employers to test for suspicion or for post-accident. Now, the company needs to define what they're going to identify as post-accident because is it, did someone get injured? Did it cost the company money? What, you know, did property, was there property damage? It can't just be, and OSHA has even chimed in on this and said it can't be, I got a bee sting because that's through nobody's fault, right? So did they do something to contribute to an accident? And if so, is it possible they were under operating under the influence? Then the drug test is warranted. So even in California, even in New York, where there are the most restrictive drug testing laws in those two states, employers have the right to test. Look, we passed the Safe and Drug-Free Workplace Act back in the 80s that says it is an employer's responsibility to make sure that employees who choose not to use drugs are protected from their coworkers who do. So employers can be sued for irresponsible hiring practices and violating labor laws if they don't take measures to protect people. So most companies, even that don't do a pre-employment test or a random drug testing pool, will still do post-accident testing, and they are still able to test for cause, which means you suspect someone is on the job operating under the influence or, under the use of a substance. I don't like saying impaired by because there's no legal definition for impairment, and normal really comes after us for that, but intoxicated. Are they intoxicated right now on the job? You have the right not only to do the test, but to take action. So as long as they're doing that within the parameter of their state laws, the Supreme Court ruled years ago, when DOT was implementing their testing program, that they would uphold an employer's right to test. And this happened in several major transportation cases. They would uphold the, in fact, reasonable suspicion testing was upheld by the Supreme Court in a famous landmark case involving the railroad, stating that the employer only needs something more than a hunch. That's the legal wording. Only needs something more than a hunch. And if they feel like they have to be able to articulate and document the behavior. But if the behavior is there, they have the right to test, and they don't have to be right about the outcome of the test, but they do have the right to try to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Because, look, people can be impaired by lack of sleep, by stress, by health, by mental health, right? So the drug test is just a part of the puzzle. It's a tool in the toolbox to say, oh, surprise, so-and-so is using cocaine. We did not know that. It's not always about marijuana, but quite often it is because that's the most abused drug in the United States. So it really is incumbent upon the employer to decide what their boundaries for safety are. And I try to encourage employers not to look at it as a position on a drug, but as a position on safety and what the safety boundaries are for the workplace.
So that's how they get around pre-employment testing, because you have no suspicions, you have no idea whether they use or not, but you're going to test them anyway.
By and large, yes. And so there's an awful lot of companies out there that do not do the pre-employment test, but when you're looking at qualified candidates, depending on the position that you're hiring for, I have a cousin who has worked in public utilities for years and years, and he always tells me, this is my first IQ test for my new employees. Were they dumb enough to show up prepared to work, or did they come to the pre-employment test failing and telling me they use drugs? Now, look, not all people see it that way.
That's usually the second IQ test, because the first IQ test is the person who comes in and wants to know how much vacation they get before they interview.
Right.
That would be the self-elimination tool right there.
Well, believe it or not, the pre-employment drug test is a self-elimination tool as well, because I can't tell you how many people have come in, have interviewed well, and when you ask them, hey, you're qualified, you're in the running, can you pass a drug test? Oh, yeah. Well, guess what? They never come back. Why didn't they come back? They were pretty much assured a position.
Do you find out if they didn't pass?
I never got a chance to do the drug test because they never came back.
So it's not like you did the drug test and then they disappear.
They disappear before. I've had them fail the drug test, but I've had more come in, go through the whole interview process, and then when you mention a drug test, then they don't come back for a second interview. They don't come back to do the drug test. They just vanish, and then they ghost you. Well, you know why. Because they couldn't pass a drug test.
Wasn't it they didn't like you?
Well,
you're not taking this as a personal.
That was probably a big part of it, but
not a personal problem.
I was once a part of a management team at a company, Blockbuster Video, in Nashville, and there was a guy who came in high all the time, and I just randomly said, "Don't be surprised if." They do random drug tests. He never came back to work. I didn't say they were going to.
No.
I said, don't be surprised.
That's all you have to do.
Well, you know, 5 minutes ago, I apparently was channeling this moment. I have two terrific songs for you, and we have to take a quick break. Imagine that timing. Fantastic. It's a good thing I don't smoke pot. Otherwise, I'd never be able to make those things happen. That'd be terrible. Bill a towel on me. Oh, man. So you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us,
man.
I'm afraid to wash my hair because I might open my eyes and find someone standing there. People say I'm crazy.
Well, I thought of another qualifier prior to doing the drug test. When you're doing the interview with somebody, you want to kind of keep track on how many times do they use the word dude, because that's pretty good indication. And I have had people do that. A lot of dude, a lot of hand gestures. It's like, I don't think you're going to work out.
Yeah. Huh. Well, we have hit Bill's hot button topic here, Joe. Bill is very animated today.
Well,
I'm going to hear about this for the rest of the day.
I definitely want to say that something that has made Indisa and our work unique is we also don't believe that every single employee has to be fired for failing a drug test. And that's been kind of a cultural shift in our industry over the last several years. But one of the reasons for that is because currently when you have young people coming into the workplace, and even those that are now coming into their like 30s, they've never lived in a culture in the U.S. that has not been drug friendly.
Right.
A lot of them have never had drug education. Mm. They don't even know like basic knowledge about drinking and driving. And you know, what we used to get when we were kids, because MAD came on the scene and we got educated in those programs like DARE, there's been a concerted effort to get rid of DARE programs, and that's a whole other show, I promise you. But, you know, a lot of these kids have never even heard of DARE, or they hear it as a dirty word. Mm-hmm. It's something bad. So I say to employers all the time, usually weekly, I say, I'm so sorry you had to become a drug expert in the course of what you do. That's not fair to you.
Yeah, exactly.
But here I am trying to help you. And we do have people in our industry that try to take that off the employer's back and manage the policies and programs for them as third-party administrators so they can just, like, concentrate more on doing their job well. But we've gotten very involved in recovery-friendly workplace initiatives, which has kind of been spreading across the country in a grassroots way, started in New Hampshire by Governor Sununu. who is now the president of Airlines for America, I believe. And we've really seen success when employers can have second chance policies for violations in a way that educates people, identifies whether or not they have a problem or they just did something stupid, and, you know, having them take a drug education course. Maybe they need to be on a follow-up testing program because they really do have a problem, or maybe they just need to understand there's boundaries here and you will respect them. So there's a balanced way to do this that is fair for everyone, but at the end of the day, it really is about public safety, and we need to keep our eyes on that.
Well, and so your very first thing on your website under why you guys are doing this, employee substance use costs U.S. employers more than $164 billion annually, and small business owners face upward of $7,000 per month in lost revenue due to employee turnover, absenteeism, lack of productivity, accidents, injuries, and workplace fatalities. So none of this is working out. I mean, this isn't not doing this should not be, you know, we shouldn't have one of the options be, well, we're just going to blow it off and take our chances.
Well, yeah, if you didn't do it, that number would probably be double that.
Right. You know, it's a terrible idea. Obviously, the stats prior were awful.
Yeah, you're implementing a policy that shortens that number a little bit.
Hopefully. Hey, just out of curiosity, on the federal side, so let's say like the FAA, for instance, you have somebody who works at an airport doing, I don't know, FAA-ness. I don't know. I guess maybe TSA. How about TSA? So they're a TSA inspector at the airport, and they come in to do the random drug test. I've never been drug tested, apparently. I just was thinking, like, I don't even know how this works.
Well, ask me a question. I've done lots of them.
No, but you've never – have you been drug tested?
No.
Do you drug test yourself?
I've never drug tested myself, but –
sending the Keebler elves to out of the tree to come and get you?
Huh?
All right.
Yeah.
So here's somebody who's working for TSA. The drug test person comes in. You have to, I guess, pee in a thing, container. So you have to pee a certain amount, apparently. I guess this is real. I had somebody tell me this. You have to pee a certain amount. If you can't pee a certain amount, they give you 40 ounces of water, make you sit in a chair in a special spot, and wait until you can pee the right amount. And if you can't, then I guess you get fired because technically you refused the test. Does that sound normal?
That's someone's doing it wrong.
That sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it?
Doing it wrong. So the federal model has been replicated by employers across the country for years. Scientifically, a person should be able to drink a certain amount of water and urinate within 3 hours. So if they're following the federal model, we call it a shy bladder. If they have a shy bladder and they cannot provide the specimen, we then provide them a certain amount of water and give them up to 3 hours. Now, if they cannot provide in that 3 hour time, then they need to see a physician to see if there's something, you know, medically wrong with them and is a reason why they could not provide. And if there is found to be no medical reason for why they did not provide, that would be considered a refusal because it would be considered like they intentionally avoided providing a specimen. I've seen people sit through the 3 hours, and then as soon as the timer went off, they ran to the public restroom to urinate because they were holding it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the federal testing works, and it is how it works for TSA employees as well because they're under the federal testing program. However, can I just say, because I don't want to run out of time to explain this to y'all, the entire federal drug testing program is under risk of not being able to test for marijuana imminently.
Yes.
And
I didn't
that's
want to run out
we,
either. I know. Yes.
Let's talk about that.
Good segue. Yes, let's race into the segue of the rescheduling. We had Dave Evans on last week, so we talked about a lot of the legal stuff, but yeah, the testing and the safety and all that, and you guys also spoke out against the rescheduling.
We did, and our position is and always has been on this issue, is that when President Reagan signed the executive order, he tied the science of drug testing to HHS, which at the time was the best science in the country. But in the order that, and the way that all of this was set up back in the 80s and 90s, HHS is only allowed to test for drugs that are Schedule 1 and 2. They cannot certify or validate the labs to test for anything over a Schedule 1 or 2. So with the current administration making marijuana a Schedule 3 drug, HHS can no longer certify the SAMHSA certified labs that we are required to use to test for marijuana. Therefore, Schedule 3 would have the federal Schedule 3 would have the unintended consequence of immediately taking marijuana out of the, you know, standard five panel drug test that's been used for years.
But that's meaning that only federal, be on the federal side, right?
Well, it is on the federal side.
But that's
however,
like the standard for everything, right?
Right. That's the standard for everything. There's 23 states that say your state drug test policy must follow DOT. And also, there's no state protections, right? There's very few states have any requirements on drug testing and those parameters and how you test and whatnot. A lot of them have some rules of things you can't do, but there are very few have any guidance on what it should look like except for follow the DOT model. So we could be looking at coming into an era where we cannot test federal employees for marijuana. That would include all of the modes of Department of Transportation, Coast Guard, which includes FAA, transit, railroad, you know, FMCSA, all of that.
And Amtrak, who already has such a great safety record.
Right? But it also includes all federal employees under the federally mandated Safe and Drug-Free Workplace Act, which are over 600 agencies, and it includes anyone who carries a gun in their job or has safety or security protocols, security clearances, et cetera. We're talking TSA, CIA, FBI, all of that. Testing for marijuana can go away overnight as soon as our new attorney general hears from the DEA that they're going to pull the trigger under pressure, and the attorney general recommends to the president that we're a go.
What about Congress?
So Congress, you know, they could step in with a rule. So what?
No, I'm talking about them being tested. Congress being tested.
Oh, well,
there's no testing.
If they are tested. Yeah, it's anybody. I mean, it's anybody. It's in any federal program. So ultimately, we have been advocating for a safety carve-out to protect the DOT testing program since our inception, and we continue to advocate for that. And that's what our testimony was about with the DEA. We need the safety carve-out. This must be protected. And we have people that really believe in us and really want this to happen. The problem is there's a lot of confusion. Like, for instance, the DOT would probably tell you, I don't know, they've changed their opinion a few times. They would probably tell you, no, we have the authority to test. Nothing will happen. It's not whether or not they have the authority to test. It's not whether or not any of them have authority. The problem is the labs can't be certified to do it.
Uh-huh.
And so that's where the problem is that we've been trying to get fixed. We do have some pretty weak language that's been added as an afterthought or an amendment to the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee's Resurfacing Authorization Act. We had really strong language in there, and then it got yanked, and then it got added back in as an amendment at the last minute because they realized, oh, this also includes air traffic controllers. Bad idea. Let's tack this on. But the piece that got tacked on is not the strong language that we need to really protect the whole program. So we're working on that. But what we're staring down the barrel of right now is a race between the Resurfacing Authorization Act completion and the completion of Federal Schedule 3. Who's going to get there first?
Right.
And if rescheduling gets there before the safety carve-out, we could have a gap in testing for marijuana in transportation that I don't even want to think about. But it does keep me awake at night, I promise you that.
As far as drug testing goes, is marijuana the number one thing that shows up in drug tests?
Yes. By far, yes.
Yeah, so I figured.
Yeah, the Quest Diagnostics Drug Testing Index, which has been published for over 30 years annually, has shown that since 2012, increases year over year for marijuana positivity have gone up dramatically. We've had the highest positivity rate since drug testing began. And they report on it every year. They did a big press release about it just a few weeks ago for the 2025 data. And but they are cautioning the current data, if you put it up against graphs from previous years, appears that marijuana positivity is dropping, but that's not accurate. What's happening is testing for marijuana is dropping.
Right.
The positivity rates by percentage are still going up, but employers are dropping the test, so the test numbers are going down, which is shrinking the data set or data pool. But marijuana is the most commonly abused drug in the United States by far. It used to be alcohol, but marijuana is surpassing it in some sectors. It just depends on kind of like the region you live in, if your state has legalization or not. Legal states have far greater positivity than non-legal states, clearly. So, yeah, it is. It's the greatest problem that we have for safety in the U.S.
Yeah. Do drug tests, do they test for alcohol?
We do test for alcohol. Now, we don't pre-employment test for alcohol unless it's very highly safety sensitive. So you have some sectors that will say you just cannot go on this job unless you have an alcohol test. So there's some mining operations that you cannot walk into that job unless you take an alcohol test.
Right.
And so it just depends on what the job is. But in the DOT program, testing for alcohol is, for post-accident, for reasonable cause, on randoms. But what the DOT program does is every year, based on the previous year's positivity, they set a random test rate standard. So alcohol is never tested as prevalently as drugs because the positivity rate is so much lower. People tend to totally understand I shouldn't go to work drunk, but going to work high seems to be like we haven't quite gotten there yet, right?
Yeah.
So, for instance, most DOT programs will test for 50% of the employees over the course of a year for drugs and 10% for alcohol. And those numbers can be different based on which mode of transportation it is and their data, et cetera. But that tends to kind of be the standard. So, yeah, we do test for alcohol.
What about military? So this would also preclude drug testing in our military?
Not
for
quite.
For marijuana?
Because the military tends to operate under their own authority, right? And so they don't fall under these parameters. The military and nuclear regulatory control established their own separate testing authority years ago and how they do it and all of that. So, and military is completely internal to them.
Okay.
They don't have to worry about the SAMHSA certified labs and all of that. In fact, I think a lot of them can even use certain types of rapid test devices as long as they confirm it with a lab-based confirmation. But, I also will say this particular case won't impact the military testing. That does not mean they won't change policies because they are under a tremendous amount of pressure to do so. So I think we could see a day coming in the future where those programs change.
And what is, I know we're going to have to take a quick break here, but I know they have different types of testing. They have blood, urine, saliva, hair. Which one of those is the most accurate? Would it depend on the drug or the time of use? And which one of those is the most accurate and most popular?
That is such a good question. I mean, urine is most popular.
Bill is just killing it today.
He is. Urine is the most popular because it's the most affordable, and it is highly evidentiary, which means it's held up in court, hundreds of times.
Mm-hmm.
Hair is history. So when you do a hair test, and these are all very highly accurate tests when performed by a SAMHSA-certified lab, okay? Hair, you go back 30 days, and you can go back 90 days depending on how much hair is tested. So there are some industries that use hair. The trucking industry loves hair testing. They would love for it to be part of the federal panel. They want to see who they're putting out there on the road, and it's particularly some trucking companies that have done hair testing traditionally, but even like the Trucking Alliance, very pro-hair, American Trucking Association, very pro-hair, which, you know, we support them in that. But hair would not be what you would want to do for a certain type of test. Like if you're going to do a post-accident test, a hair test is going to say, well, this has been in their system, you know, 30 days ago. You're going to have a hard time proving that in court, that was recent use.
Right.
So your urine test is solid. It will hold up. But I am really excited about lab-based oral fluid testing, which DOT approved in 2023. However, we've had a little hold up at the FDA. We're trying to get it through.
And what is it? Lab-based what?
Oral fluid.
Oh, oral fluid.
So the yeah, the mouth swab.
Oh, okay.
The saliva.
Oral fluid. Yeah. That was secret lab talk there. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. So the saliva, yeah, lab-based saliva test, that is a great test because it can detect use within a few hours of marijuana. And a lot of employers, I think, will like it as far as, like, those that are in legal states because it won't look back past 24 hours in most cases. Mm. The devices can be different. Some have a 36-hour look back and don't go beyond that. Some are 24. We're trying to. There's a lot of companies that are trying to get it down to, like, a 12-hour window so you know there's use within 12 hours. Some are telling me they're working on a 6-hour look back. So you would really know what someone has used, like, within from the last hour to 6, 12, 24 hours, and it's not going beyond that. And so the hope is that will make it more, you know, quote, fair for the employee who lives in a legal state. So drug testing is always evolving. New technologies are coming all the time. I'm really going to go look for that gum because I want to know what that's about.
Yeah, we have to do a little more probing on that during the break. We've got to take one last quick break, and then we're going to come back with our guest. Been a wealth of information today, Joe McGuire. She's the executive director of the National Drug and Alcohol Screening Association. You can find out all about her and contact info at
wethepeopleradio.us.
I can't get these memories out of my mind, and some kind of madness has started to evolve. I tried so hard to let you go, but some kind of madness is swallowing me whole. Yeah. He said hello and put me on hold. To say the least, the cat was cold. He said, don't call us, child, we'll call you. I said, you got my number? He said, yeah, I got it. We walked in the door. Don't call us.
Bill's drug testing theme song, Dude. Oh, my God. So, Joe, we have like 10 minutes. I knew we would blow through this really fast. There's just so much with this rescheduling that just sirens going off outside the window. Well-timed. It is. This is just like an emergency. We're looking at a major
it's
problems.
It's going to affect all kinds of stuff.
Absolutely.
Do they seem to get that? I get the impression from people who testified in that they're not really getting that.
They don't really get it. In fact, you know, I'm sure you heard from David Evans that in the hearing, we were pretty shocked that the attorneys on behalf of the DEA asked questions in a way that led us to believe that their mindset was very pro Schedule 3. It was It was interesting, shocking, and a little heartbreaking, to be honest with you. But one of the arguments to me was, well, why can't a company just test under their own authority? Well, they didn't ask me that. They just said a company can test under their own authority, right? In some states, yes. In some states, no. And what they're getting at is, okay, American Airlines, can they test under their own authority? If federal testing ends up with this problem, well, why can't American Airlines or whoever just test on their company policy and this is not a big deal? First of all, the reason that President Reagan had to step in with an executive order is because the unions were fighting against the modes of transportation, fighting against drug testing, screaming about it, you know, personal rights, civil rights, all of that, violation of constitutional rights, everything. And they were prohibiting and eliminating drug testing in these arguments, lawsuits. I mean, it'll invoke a plethora of lawsuits. So it's not just can a company test under their authority, and you brought it up earlier when you were asking me about state laws. I mean, some of these airlines, the challenges that we're having, and I'm sorry I'm tripping over my words, but there's a lot going on in my brain. A company can only operate within their own state authority, right? Well, not everybody is hubbed out of a certain state in American Airlines, or any airlines for that matter. So, hey, where is Alaskan Airlines based out of Seattle? So are they allowed, like, what do those state laws say? They will be beholden to those state laws, but also they don't just have one location. There's hubs everywhere. So Southwest, they could do one thing in Texas, but where else are they located? And where are those employees based out of? And what state laws are they beholden to? Because they're not always just operating within a state. Truck drivers, they might be hired by a company in X state, but they're traveling across the country and back. What state law applies where they are? And these are things that have not been made abundantly clear in drug testing law as of yet. What it will take is lawsuits and court decisions to decide those things. And so we could be deciding those things for decades to come based on what judges think, based on appeals, based on can these things get to the Supreme Court. We are looking at a mess.
Yeah.
And it's better to keep the federal program intact and not have to fight this out in the courts. This is going to cost companies billions of dollars to defend or give up and then just pay out on settlements for the accidents and the injuries. Which cost do we want? The best way to do this is to protect the federal testing program and stop creating, you know, all of this mess on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sure, because once all the accident profile returns, the link that we have up for your organization that is marijuana and safety sensitive work, that was from July 13th, and just all of it, the you have one whole category, the lies, challenging marijuana is safer than alcohol, all of that then, like, basically goes kind of back to square one.
Mm-hmm, it does. It just all resets back to where we were. And there was a congressional report before the Omnibus Transportation Employee Testing Act came into effect. And that congressional report outlined the accidents that I had mentioned earlier from public transit, from airline, from railway, from federal motor carriers, from Coast Guard. It was across the board. And lives were lost, and we certainly don't want to go back. I mean, the one that we always point to, our big watershed moment, was the Chase Conrail's Maryland train crash of 1981, which I'm sorry, 87, which I mentioned right up at the top. That train operator was operating under the influence of marijuana. In fact, his name was Ricky Gates. He and his brakeman were smoking on the train while they were operating it. They missed signal after signal after signal to stop, to change track, and they just missed them all, repeated signals. They ended up colliding with a passenger train full of people who were coming home from holiday break after Christmas. I believe it was January 6th. I mean, over 2,000 people were killed.
Wow.
The children were killed. People were maimed. I've met a woman who survived that crash. She was coming home to go back to college after the holidays. She has looked me in the face and said, please don't ever allow something like this to happen again. And if you guys look this up, you might remember, I was in college, and at that time, 87, we didn't have 24 hours news cycles. We still had, you know, the big three in PBS.
Right.
It was on every news channel through the night. They were trying to rescue people in the bitter cold. They couldn't find them. They couldn't see. It was basically a railway that went through a neighborhood. The devastation was horrendous, and that was like the linchpin of saying enough is enough. But that certainly was not the only crash that had happened. We can't go backwards, and we have to stop ignoring this issue.
Well, and so there will be. So what's the when you tell them that? I guess we shouldn't. You know, we shouldn't leave without giving you know the bird's eye view. When you told them all that in the hearings, what's the response? Is it just, you know, hurry on to the next thing, or that's not real?
Yeah.
I mean, do they try to deny that that's real?
At this point, a complete non-response. We will see what the administrative law judge says after hearing the testimony. We don't know what that's going to be yet.
Uh-huh.
But at the moment in time, there was no response. And like I said, there's a lot of belief that this will not happen. I have sat in many offices in D.C. begging them for this over the course of 8 years. And I can name names of people who said, we just don't believe that'll ever happen. We don't think it's going to unfold that way. Someone somewhere will fix it. Who's going to fix it?
Like they're not going to reschedule it?
Right. Well, no. They just don't think that our interpretation of
the bad things will happen.
Yeah. They're like, well, yeah. So we're straight up telling them HHS will have to remove that approval to test from the labs. And they're like, we don't think that'll really happen. But I'll tell you something. HHS, internally, the drug testing program, they know that is what they have to do. And they've been asking us, what's your prediction on when we've got to remove this from the drug test? Based on what you're seeing in D.C. Of course, I can't answer that question yet because I don't have the crystal ball of how the administration is going to roll this out. But at the end of the day, we know it. We're just trying to convince the policymakers of it. And there, we do have champions. Look, there's some great people who care about this issue. They're working hard on our behalf. We've got some people who really do care. But I think we still got a ways to go to get this. And people can always write their representatives and senators and say, support the safety carve-out in the transportation infrastructure bill. Susan Collins is looking at doing something through appropriations. We've got people who really, you know, Sessions is great on this. I mean, if I start naming names, I'm going to get in trouble because I'm going to forget people. But there's people who really care, and they get it, and they're on our side. But we've got to see this happen in a big way. I will say, disappointingly, the White House has just been silent, and we've even provided sample language for an executive order so they can take care of it. We've heard nothing back.
That's too bad. I tell you what, I drive on the freeway every day. And I got to say, it's scary to drive around a big rig. First of all, people don't respect the distance required for them to stop. They'll pull in front of them. They'll brake light them. They'll, you know. But the truck drivers themselves, I've seen a really degrading quality of driving with these drivers in the last few years. They cross the line. They hit the dots on the side. Just terrible driving. And I know they've come out with a lot of stories about licensing and that sort of thing. But I just wonder how much of this is drug related, because these guys are not they're not qualified to drive a big rig, and that thing is a missile going down the road. If you make one mistake, that thing's going to scatter cars all over the place. And people, I think, really need to pay closer attention to the truck drivers out on the road. I mean, there's plenty of great truck drivers out there, been doing it a long time, but there's a new batch out there now that. They can drive it in a straight line, But when they pull off the road, and I see this every, almost not every day, but every month I see this, they'll come off the highway, they'll pull into our yard, and they can't turn that truck around. They'll crash into stuff. We had one that hooked a he was turning around our yard. He hooked a tractor and flipped it over, and then just kept going. He was like, "Oh, whatever." Didn't even know he did it. But you see that a lot with these truck drivers. People really need to pay attention.
And in my last 5 seconds, we have to thank Joe McGuire for winding Bill up to a level heretofore not seen.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go home and have a drink.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a delight.
Thanks a lot. We want to do it again when you have more for us. You can contact us anytime. You can find everything about the program, including the commercial free archives, at WeThePeopleRadio.us. You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.